Oh,
of
yeah.
persuasive speech. The ethos was the most important.
Excellent. Thank
and
you.
And no block.
Okay.
All right.
Got it.
Anything else?
Let me think here. Okay, so I told you, know the four components. When it comes to persuasive speeches, the three main components of the four that are typically used, expected, and create the most persuasive speech are ethos, logos, and pathos. Okay? Everybody got that?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Persuasive.
So then, also remember, you know, Marjorie is very practical when she comes to lecture and tells you what she's telling you, because what she's doing is giving you the information that you're going to need for your next assignment.
Okay.
So what that tells you is, what is she going to focus on in the next assignment?
Mm-hmm. Ethos, pathos, and logos.
But what kind of a speech is it?
Persuasive.
So ethos.
Okay, so now that you know you're going to be giving persuasive speech, might be a good idea to make sure you understand persuasive speeches.
Sounds good.
Because that's what she's going to have to do next. And so what she's doing is wanting you to have all the tools and the, you know, the most effective techniques for creating a persuasive speech. So know the parts about the persuasive speech. I think it's pages, 38, 39, 40 in the handout?
Yeah, it's in
there. Somewhere in there. It's 40 in the handout, right?
41.
Yeah.
Okay. 40, 41 right in there. Okay, so it should be the art of persuasion at the very top.
Yes, ma'am.
Know those. You're going to need it anyway for your speech, so you might as well have it in your head for the midterm, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. There are going to be questions out of the book, like what you're noticing that we're, you know, like the chilling effect. That was just one sample question, but it would be a good idea to know what those are, the different effects. Let's see what else here. Okay, and
Just to reiterate for a moment, with the persuasive speech, the components of a persuasive speech, we have four essentials, but the ethos is essential to a persuasive speech because of the credibility component, given that we're presenting a case, and we should be able to back up whatever we're saying, because the audience may become hostile, and we'd like to establish a common ground, we'd like to keep the conversation going as opposed to becoming a hostile, closed down, chilling effect that could occur if you do not have the appropriate credibility behind your elements.
Well, chilling effect is more about relationship than another person.
Oh, I wish.
We're just talking about persuasive speech right now. Chilling effect, that's usually during a persuasive speech, unless you rip off.
Okay.
So, with. Did anybody take notes about your lecture when she was talking about the ethos and why credibility is the most important thing?
Did we take notes? Yeah, I can find it.
What lecture was that, you remember?
First?
Yeah.
They're wondering what lecture that was? Is that what?
Yeah.
If it was the first, then I missed it.
I have to look at my notes.
Why ethos is so important, why credibility is so important during persuasive.
So, going from my memory on why ethos is so important, it's to make sure that you have a level of credibility to the audience so that you're believable. And if you've been through it, and if you've gone through it yourself, then you can speak on it and speak on a logical term, and meaning that you can give the methodology and how to go about doing whatever you're asking them to do.
It was, hold on here, it was the lecture January 30th.
My sister's birthday.
First one. I can't look at my notes there.
Yeah. Two of us were still core shopping on that was the first
one. Well, I had the whole thing recorded, so I'll go in.
Ryan has it recorded.
I'll go in, I'll look for it. And I plan on even putting these on the website so you guys can...
One second.
Okay, here it is. I actually have it word for word.
Okay, good.
Nice. Everybody got your pencils ready and your laptops?
Yes, ma'am. Oh, you don't have your laptop.
All right, so she went over persuasive speech, specifically persuasion, pathos, ethos, logos, and mythos. She said, you don't need to be liked, you need credibility, so know your audience.
That's right.
Because ethos is about building your credibility, building your believability, right? That you are the authority, you're the one that is the go-to person for the topic you're talking about. But when you talk about being liked or having people feel like they have something in common with you, that isn't built so much with ethos, it's built with pathos, because pathos is eliciting a feeling or emotion with your audience, right?
Right.
Right.
Because you're using emotion to connect with them, and there are all different kinds of
those questions.
Okay.
And it's probably better to lean toward the book for having a thorough understanding of logos, pathos, and ethos. The handout, it doesn't have as much as the book. So keep those in mind, okay?
Okay.
All
right, let's see what else do we have. Yeah,
that's what I heard. Oh, buzzing over there. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So does that bring us back to number 7 or still?
She's just going through her notes and the things that she wanted to tell us.
I think she's actually got the exam open probably.
Yeah, we can just let her talk.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it'd be... I don't know how good this is on record.
It's okay.
We'll see.
Hopefully the 24 of us can figure it out.
Oh yeah.
All right, so let me look up a couple other things here.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't we finish the sample test?
Okay.
Number 7, I believe we're on.
Yep.
Okay. 7 would be B.
What was that?
B.
Boy or David?
Question number 7, which the multiple choice number 7, the answer is B. The audience is unlikely to hear the other side of the issue. Okay.
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 Okay. This one. Okay, cool.
Boy, it is hot here.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
Please don't rub it in.
Oh, it's really hot here.
It's okay, you can take it off.
All right, if we start to cry when we think of credibility, you'll know it's because we know we're not in the Bahamas.
See, all you need to do is have a nice tropical drink in front of you.
Oh, I joked around with her.
Okay.
Alrighty.
The 4-minute barrier describes the time a person has to accept or deny a proposal. Bakari said that's false.
No, it's false because the 4-minute barrier would be the time in which a person has to create a good impression. So there are a lot in the book. I think it's second and third edition. It talks about the 4-minute barrier. That. I think it's the person has within 30 seconds to 4 minutes is generally the accepted norm. All the different settings say a lot of different things, but you have from 30 seconds to 4 minutes to within which people form an impression about you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so for instance, you know, let's just use me as an example. I've been working with Marjorie for years, but the truth is that when students come into class and they meet me the first time, the first impression is, I know you aren't going to do this, of course, but the first impression generally is, oh, she's just a PA.
No, that's my impression. No, I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah,
that's usually what the majority of students do. But the smart ones say, maybe she's a good resource and she can help me.
That's what we always say.
Yeah.
That's fun. I think TAs are almost always people like that. Then by the end of the semester, the bad grades
can be created from a variety of things. It can be from how you meet a person. For instance, you don't meet me in a coffee shop and say, oh, wow, she's a TA. Wow, she loves her job. You see me in second position to Marjorie, right?
No, I don't. But I.
Most people do. Exactly. It's expected because I am in second position to Marjorie because she is the lecturer of the class. And that's how it is. And
just that barrier.
Because I understand that that's part of what I have to deal with, that's my 4-minute barrier challenge, right?
Okay.
So if you think of it that way,
to create a
that's what the 4-minute barrier is about. Okay?
Sounds good.
Great.
All right. So. Moving on next, let's see, a goal for every person involved in conflict is to try to remain emotionally calm.
True.
True.
Absolutely true, no matter what. The person who stays the calmest but still is interactive, the person who is calm and checks out, don't do that. You have to remain calm and present. Those are the two components during conflict. And when you think about conflict, that's going to start to occur in your near future, like persuasive speeches followed by hostile question and answer sessions.
Click on it. It goes to this.
It would be worth your while to remember to remain calm and focused while you're taking hostile questions. Okay?
Excellent.
You also...
All right, so
Linda, you reiterate a lot that what is it? I'm trying to channel you here. You say to be emotional. You know, do not be emotional. Make sure you're thinking. If you become too emotional, then you're certain to unravel, or it's certain to. And try you. You say it very
right.
You say very nicely. Hmm.
That's right. When you have conflict, when you're faced with conflict, people who don't know how handle conflict, whether it's hostile conflict or just challenging conflict, they generally have three different ways of, there's a lot of different ways, but the three main ones are that they'll either completely check out mentally and emotionally, and they're just not there. They just blank, you know, blank stare, blank look, and they don't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. Or you'll have a person become the opposite end of the spectrum, which is argumentative, aggressive, arrogant, and they push toward that because they're when they're feeling that they're out of control, the more out of control the person feels, the more aggressive they get because they feel like they aren't getting what they want. The way that you want to handle this is to remain authoritative, not aggressive, authoritative, stand on the points that you've made in your speech, remain calm. If you start to feel yourself getting upset yourself, then that means that the emotional component is rising. And what happens is that when the emotions take over, the logic goes down. That make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But so you've got to force your prefrontal cortex to engage in order to reduce the amount of emotion that you're feeling. So it's really important that during your persuasive speech that you remain focused on your main points of your topic because they're going to try to tear them apart. And know what they are. Know them cold so that when you're taking on those hostile Q&A that you are able to come up with an informative response to the person.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
All right. So that's the basics of it. You could also read about it in the book, and there is a part in the handout about hostile Q&A. So it's about remaining calm. Let's see, where is it in there?
Emotional intelligence.
Where's hostile Q&A in the...
Oh, you looking for?
You said there was a handout on hostile Q&A? Hostile Q&A?
Did we have that in the handout or not?
I don't remember it.
I don't either,
oh, you
Bill.
What?
I don't have it right now. I do have the fundamentals of public speaking in front of me. I'll look through it, too.
We can look that up, Linda. It's okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead and look it up.
Yeah, we can look that up later.
Good way to think of the audience, also.
She
yeah, I don't think it's in the
out. Yeah. Let's go on to number three, if you're ready. So you can get back to the beach.
All right. I'm actually going to go into Nassau soon.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
You know what, though? Good for all you. Right. Awesome. Like, that's it. Like, we can't get to the Bahamas today. That's our problem, you know? You enjoy it.
Okay. I think I'm coming back here for spring break. I found a really awesome...
Can you find a group deal for the for all of us, too?
We can give our speeches really down cool. there. Our final speeches.
A group deal with for us included?
Actually, there's these villas. They can be rented, yes, as a group. I think you can get, I think the one I have is that balcony view over the ocean.
Yes.
I know it's rough, really.
Oh,
but
cool.
They come with queen-size beds and king-size beds, but you can get an extra cot in here.
Nice.
Yeah,
hey, I sleep on the floor.
I was just about to say.
Seriously,
the rooms are probably like 18 by 20 for the bedroom.
That's plenty of room to sleep on the floor for five of us.
Oh, let me tell you, sleeping bag, you're all set, actually. Yeah.
It's
really gorgeous here. If any of you want to know, you know, when I get back, where I am, I'll let you know. And it's really affordable. So.
It is.
All
right.
Can I get back to the handout for the Q&A?
I'm organizing it.
Yeah, no. Audience, when was that passed out?
The first day, I think.
Are you talking about that? I couldn't quite hear you.
This is melting.
The hostile Q&A handout.
It wasn't this handout that it was in. It's actually in the book, How to Handle Questions from an Audience.
Okay. I thought the handout I was missing. Okay.
Which book do you actually have? Which edition?
I have the very first one.
Oh, the second edition or the first edition?
The first one for the whole series, which I think is the second edition.
Okay. So
I was the one who bought the one that was from the early days of the book.
All right.
He
so
saved
the second
$2.
Edition and the third edition, if you have those, go to the portion about how to handle questions from an audience and know that, okay?
And that'll be in the exam?
I cannot tell you that.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, that means yes, Bill.
I can tell you you're going to need it for your persuasive speech because did Mark go over whether or how the persuasive speeches were handled and graded with the hostile Q&A?
No.
No.
No? Okay, let me just fill you in on how that worked. There's a... you remember this form that I showed you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to be what your speech is going to be graded on. Oh, and here's... Oh, I brought it with me. You guys are so lucky. So that's going to be how your speech is going to be graded. But you're also going to get a separate grade for... You see the title of that?
Q&A?
No.
Ah, hold on. You see it?
Yes.
Something to answers. Questions and answers session.
All right. So that's going to be your second grade for the same speech, but for the taking the questions portion of it, which will be at the end of your speech. So you're going to want to know this, and I'll just do it now so because you guys are, you know, the study group people.
Okay.
You're going to want to know that when you handle your hostile Q&A, what you've got to do when you respond to the question is be very brief and to the point. The second thing you need to do is that when you give your response, it must be relevant to the question that was asked. And it must be appropriate. In other words, it's got to fit, right?
See, I've always believed that on giving an answer, you should be vague and misleading.
if you're vague and misleading, you're going to lose your credibility.
That's true.
And never say a good question.
Okay. So the third thing that you want to do is you're responding. Sorry?
What was that about good question?
No, you never say that's a good question.
Oh, that's true, but I'll get to that at the end.
I'm
Thanks
sorry.
For bringing that up, Ryan.
Yeah.
That's in there, too. And I'm going through what you're going to need to pay attention to. This way you don't have to ask me right after the midterm. You're going to have it just boom. Okay?
Yep.
This
yes,
is the key
ma'am.
Part. So the first thing you need to do is be brief and to the point when you answer that question. Second thing you need to do is you need to make sure that it's relevant. The third thing, make sure that you are answering the question appropriately. The fourth thing is the type of language that you use.
Type of
your use of language.
The use of language. The type of language. Use of language. Stay consistent within the topics.
Just what does that mean?
Point.
What do you mean by use of language?
Stay consistent within the answering system.
The worst grade is the person who will receive the comment incoherent.
Like deer in the headlights?
Oh,
yes.
So don't get...
Like, for instance, let's say someone is... maybe I spoke on psychology and, how to persuade people. I'm taking a hostile question from my audience, and that person says to me, what makes you so qualified to give us this speech? I don't believe you. And my answer to the person is, I've been shopping last week and I bought milk. It has nothing to do with it.
I would ask.
But it
that's
happens.
So that's irrelevant.
Students will get up there and they will ramble about stuff. Don't do that.
See that. All right.
Know that what you know.
And don't become bogged down in the field's language. Keep it so the audience has a general,
yes.
has an understanding.
So don't speak over
that's
their heads, basically.
Just speak normal language because you have an audience that is... You know, your audience has a lot of different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are English is a first language. Some of them English is a second, third, fourth language. So you've got to make sure that the words that you use and the vocabulary is geared towards your audience, so that you're not trying to talk over their heads.
Right. I like to talk over their heads so they don't ask any more questions.
We've all been guilty of that, haven't we?
That cuts the question like,
well,
okay.
You're not being graded for it.
Whatever that means.
You have a pick. Okay, so then the second portion of what you're going what we're going to be looking for your hostile Q&A is that, is your attitude toward the person that asked you a question. The two things we look for are you remaining respectful of the person, or are you showing signs of being upset with them or contempt? And those will show up at the student will roll their eyes like, oh, I can't believe they asked that question, right? Don't roll your eyes. Don't sigh happily, all of those things. Because that just shows that you're put off by the person's attention. So be respectful. The second thing with what we look at for how you respond to the person is whether or not you're judgmental of the question that they asked.
Whether or not.
Can you repeat that?
Don't come across being judgmental.
Okay.
The other thing that happens is that if a person isn't judgmental, sometimes they'll say to the audience.
Oh, man, she's freaking
out. Remember, instead of judging them, they'll try to shame them, which is another thing you should.
No, don't judge them. Don't try nothing yourself.
Should not do, and it'll look like, let me think here, okay. I can't believe you'd even ask a question like that. I mean, you know, try to shame them into not asking more questions. So avoid shame, avoid contempt, avoid talking over their heads. Those are all considered disrespectful. The third component that we look for is that remain in control of what you're doing, of yourself, your physical self, and also the speed in which you speak, because that's also a physical component of it. So it's verbally and non-verbally that we look for. So physical and verbal are the two big ones we look for. All right?
Yes, ma'am.
Sounds good.
All right. The fourth one that we look for, there are six total, and they've got subcategories. So the fourth one is that body posture-wise, you need to appear like, you know, open posture, that you're not defensive, that you hold your arms together, or you cross your arms, or put them in pockets, or cross your legs, or that you move about a lot. Don't cross your body with your arms specifically or your legs, because it's considered a defensive position. Okay?
All right.
So the two things you need to do with how you appear is you need to remain open and non-defensive.